I'm Francesca Morgan, and you're listening to Industry Experts. Brought to you by Vox Markets, this podcast series features in-depth discussions with leaders and pioneers on their chosen sectors. With Accenture predicting that artificial intelligence could save the US healthcare economy around $150 billion, there's no wonder that this has engaged substantial technological growth within the sector in recent years, both in the US and across the globe. Now, where there's a lot of hype sentiment within this area, the application of AI within the earlier stages of drug development is often a narrative that is lacking. So we're looking at AI in drug development and really asking, where is the value here? So as a starting point, we need to think about how we can best understand the real implications and value of AI in primary drug discovery. So we've turned to expert Jackie Hunter, and she's going to pinpoint the fundamentals here. So Jackie, first of all, I'd just like to say thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us. You are currently the board director at Benevolent AI, and it's really interesting to get to talk to you because we truly are on the cusp of something that has true potential in transforming people's lives. I think AI is really part of this booming culture at the moment, but it can really add the most value, I think, in the healthcare sector. And I think that everyone is kind of uniformly in agreement with that. And, you know, hundreds of millions of people suffer from diseases with no drug treatment, which is kind of the basis of your company's philosophy. So I'd really like to know first, if you could help characterize the relationship that currently exists between AI and the healthcare system today, that'd be very helpful.
Well, I think if we think about the broad healthcare system, AI is only beginning to scratch the surface of the impact it could have. Although it's embryonic, we do know already there are very clear proof points about the way it can make the system more effective and efficient. So, for example, in radiology, in pathology, in the triage of patients, it can enable the healthcare services as a whole to be able to deliver much more rapidly in diagnosis. And for us, as an organisation that is really committed to being able to get medicines to patients faster, new medicines to patients faster, it will allow companies like ourselves to be able to select the patients that are going to be most responsive to these new innovative treatments and hopefully also develop them more quickly. So it's a very early stage in many areas, but I think it's going to be truly transformational. And in many ways, I don't think that healthcare systems and actually the pharmaceutical industry would be able to be functional and really be financially viable and innovative without AI going forward.
Right. And of course, you know, this, like you said, this so-called med tech sector, it's a massive market. But how do we view this development specifically with what your company is looking at, which is the earlier stages of this process, which is drug discovery and then clinical trials, all, you know, before the process of bringing this to market? How do you view this in the kind of wider evolution of this massive boom? And I ask this because, of course, they must be linked, yet it often seems that it's left out of the narrative and simply lacking when we talk about drug development specifically.
I completely agree. They are inextricably linked because a lot of the technologies that are being developed and that we're developing that can be applied, for example, patient stratification, are going to make the whole drug development process more efficient. The application of the technology into earlier drug discovery is going to have the biggest impact around target identification, because this is one of the areas where the whole process really hasn't improved at all over the past 50 years. And we still see a situation where 50% of compounds fail in phase two, and actually worse, 50% fail in phase three for lack of efficacy. So part of the development of the AI technology will allow us to identify better targets, it will also allow us to identify better biomarkers and ways in which we can assess the drugs in clinical trials. I do think the pharmaceutical industry in general has been slow to adopt artificial intelligence technology. Excellent. And the number of companies involved in this area have sprung up tremendously over the last even 5 years. But many of those companies are focused on just one very small aspect of the particular R&D process, for example, genomics, or only on a new compound identification, or on patient stratification. And I think it's only now that companies are beginning to realise that it's actually a way of doing things that you have to be totally committed to across the whole company. And that involves significant change. I mean, for us as a smaller company, we're lucky that we can, as we started from scratch, we can build a different culture, we can get the two technologies working together. And I think that has enabled us to make the progress that we have and really embed AI into everything we do.
So out of what you just said, I have two questions. And the first is just to kind of get a good knowledge on the kind of process. So I know that Benevolent AI kind of advocates these four synergies, and the first one is knowledge. So it'd be great to look at the crux of the company's philosophy, which is, of course, harnessing the power of AI and utilizing it to advance the drug discovery development. You know, could you give us an idea of the tangible scale of this journey, you know, from the early stages to market and commercialization? You know, how extensive is it? You know, is it years? I've heard a lot of kind of ballpark figures, but how long is this process?
I mean, I worked for a long time in the pharmaceutical industry in traditional big pharma. And, you know, traditionally, you would probably be working for 1 to 2 years on generating interesting hypotheses to come up with a new target in a disease area and doing some early validation work. You would then either take a chemical starting point or run a high throughput screen, and that would take you another 3 to 5 years before you came up with a candidate. And then, you know, you've got preclinical toxicology, you've got phase one and phase two and phase three testing. So overall, the whole process to actually get to market, if you're lucky and you're working in oncology where you can do your phase one studies in patients, might be 10 years.
Wow.
But more normally, you're talking 15 to 20 if you're talking about a chronic disease. So it's a very long process. And, you know, where you've got even today, you know, more recent analyses have come out in terms of the failure rates in the clinic, we're still seeing less than 10% in many disease areas of drugs failing to make it to market.
Right.
Those that enter preclinical development. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, that isn't a sustainable business model. I don't know of any other industry where, you know, 95% of what you do and what you spend your money on fails. And that's one of the reasons why the cost is estimated by Tufts of bringing a new drug to market is over $2 billion. It is because it has to encompass the cost of failure.
Right.
Even just improving the process success rate by 10%, the FDA in 2014 stated that could actually produce savings of $100 million per drug.
I guess that always tends to be left out of the narrative, right, that we all often overlook the fact that the revenue is from one successful product has to cover all the failures.
Exactly.
Right, so surely then, you know, pharma companies are going to be willing to steer away from the traditional process and come up with something that is both sustainable and economically making a lot of sense, right?
Well, I think a lot of companies are now looking at AI, a lot of big pharma companies, but because it is really a different way of doing things, it's going to take a lot of disruption in the company. to really adopt a truly AI agenda. And you've seen relatively recently AstraZeneca have announced that they are going to make artificial intelligence and digital core to their business.
Yeah.
And Novartis have done the same. And Roche, with their acquisition of Flatiron, showed that they believe that certainly in the area of patient-reported outcomes and real-world data, that it can have a tangible benefit
right.
on their bottom line. We've now, I think, got sufficient proof points to start to show that this type of technology can, and we ourselves have shown this, that we can identify new targets in disease in a much more efficient way by utilizing this huge amount of available evidence that can only be accessed by artificial intelligence machine learning methods. When you have to ingest hundreds of millions of documents and essentially read them using biomedically trained natural language processing, you just could not do that without this technology.
Yeah.
And you have to believe that by utilizing more of the evidence, we're going to be able to have a better understanding of diseases, a better understanding of the critical pathways in diseases, and therefore be much more able to pick the right targets right at the beginning to work on. Because once you've selected the target, you kind of trigger a set of activities from, you know, target validation to chemical starting points to chemistry to early clinical studies that will cost you a lot of money. So you know, getting that right, or at least being much more intelligent about it at the beginning by being able to access all this data, has to improve your success rate.
And there seems a kind of a shift in sentiment that there seems to be a lot of willingness nowadays. Do you think that you've seen a lot of traction in recent years? And is it fair to say that there will maybe, until the outcomes of these innovations are within a certain threshold, maybe that companies, specifically big players, will hold out until a certain environment of change has shifted firmly to one side? Or do you think that there's a kind of environment where it's sort of just an inevitability and everyone's just heading towards one direction?
I think the adoption is inevitable. And frankly, if big pharma companies today don't adopt this agenda, it's going to be Google and Microsoft that are going to be the companies of the future who are going to be innovating in the healthcare space. So, but I actually think we are at a tipping point at this moment. As I said at the beginning, I think there are enough proof points now to show that this technology, as applied to drug discovery and development, is not overhyped. For example, we ourselves have shown that we can get from a chemical starting point to a candidate in under a year. But other companies have also started to show this too. So it's inevitable, but I also believe we've got a tipping point in this industry. And I think in the next 18 months, we'll see a huge ramp up in large pharmaceutical companies and actually mid-sized biotech of the use of this technology. And we'll see some innovative partnerships, and we'll see some promising results, I think.
Right, exactly. And I wonder, just getting into the intricacies of Benevolent AI, you know, through your new adopted innovations, how are you tackling these systematic hurdles and ultimately streamlining these processes? Can you give us a kind of little insight into Benevolent AI and where it's gaining the most traction?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the attractions for Benevolent for me is that we've got everything from very early hypothesis generation, you know, discovering the new targets that could be important in disease, through to the ability to then rapidly process those targets, either through repurposing existing agents or through our own chemistry, and then be able to conduct the clinical trials and interrogate clinical data, which will then feed back into the process. So it's very iterative in the sense that we've created our technology around our knowledge graph and building this vast array of billions of data points to give us a much better understanding of diseases and how we can use that to generate new hypotheses to test in diseases, through to using our ability to extract information to feed into the development of better predictive models around our chemistry platform and applying machine learning approaches, for example, to synthetic analysis allows us to be able to build synthetic tractability into molecules that are now being suggested by the computer. And all this data then feeds back into the knowledge graph. So it's a very dynamic circular process as opposed to a much more linear and siloed process, which, I think really allows us to be able to move much more rapidly and nimbly. I also think one of the things that defines us too is the way we work. We work in cross-functional squads. We actually have adopted, I wouldn't have been talking about squads and stand-ups 10 years ago in pharma. We're adopting a lot of the methodology of the tech world and applying it to the drug discovery process. So it means that the technologists, the data scientists, are very well aware of the problems that we are trying to solve, whether it's identifying a better target or creating a better molecule or indeed picking the right patient population, than they would otherwise be. There's no sort of silos here. It's all very intimate, if you will. And so I think this approach, I think really it's disruptive because you're doing things in a very different way. You're empowering the scientists, but you're also empowering the technologists, because they're getting incredibly rapid feedback as to whether what they're doing is working or not.
And not only are you kind of leveraging new technologies, but I saw that you're also using AI to identify which existing drugs can have the potential to be repurposed to treat certain diseases. That's crazy. I think I read somewhere it was looking at macular degeneration and you discovered 7 existing drugs that could be repurposed here. Is this, what kind of pattern is this? Is this something that's unique, or is this something that it is going to be seen a lot through a lot of different...
I think for us, we were at the forefront of that. There are now other companies who have seen the utility of the approach and are working in this space. But because we've been working at this for the last, 5 years, really, and we're continuing to grow and develop technology, I think we've got a better approach, a better chance of being able to move some of these drugs more rapidly, either through ourselves or through our partners. As we partnered with the AAA organization that are looking at macular degeneration to do that.
Right. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there are around 8,000 diseases that are not treated. And, as we've seen, the scope of this AI application for healthcare is huge and it crosses a lot of landscapes. And like you touched on in the first couple of questions, you said that, some people look to tackle the larger problems and the larger diseases like HIV or cancer. And whilst others, are focusing on smaller, more clear-cut issues, precision medicine. And it seems that Benevolent forms its mission across the entire spectrum of these extremes. How are you delivering across both ends? And do you have a sense or a perspective about where the focus should lie?
I think there's actually more like 9,000 diseases that are untreated. But I think that we have to be pragmatic and realistic. We could come up with hypotheses in almost any disease, apart from those where there's hardly any information, which, of course, is not where our technology advantage really lies. But although we're a well-funded company, we're still a small company. And so we pick our diseases that we work on. We don't have to be specialised in any one area, because our technology allows us to get up to speed very rapidly in a particular area. But, you know, we have to focus on those diseases where we do feel our technology can make a difference. So there is information out there that we can mine and use. Where there's high unmet medical need, for sure. But also we have to look at it from a commercial perspective as well, because we would want to partner to be able to market. As a small company, we aren't, certainly not at the moment, able to take things to market ourselves. We also want to be able to validate our hypotheses. So we have to have this work on diseases where there are ways in which we can validate, whether it's through testing on human stem cell lines or in models of disease, that the target is relevant. And then ideally, in early clinical development, in either phase one or phase two studies, small phase two studies, we can show that the approach we've taken, the target we've picked, actually works and has an effect on the disease. So this rules out diseases like schizophrenia, where there's actually no good models of the disease. It rules out diseases like cardiovascular disease, where you have to do 3,000 or 4,000 patient studies in phase two to show an effect. So we've been focused on neurological diseases like ALS, motor neurone disease, or inflammatory diseases, you know, where you've got very high unmet medical need and actually where our technology can make a big impact. Inflammatory diseases like IBD, where we can get a good readout in phase one or small phase 2A studies that we are having an effect on the disease. So although it seems like we could, and it's true, we could work on anything, and we are actually quite focused. And what we want to do is to partner in other disease areas where we don't feel, you know, we have the financial capabilities to be able to progress things.
Right. And, you know, looking at this process then, after validating this hypothesis and through to finding a target that works, you know, as a company, what do you think is the greatest asset that AI can bring to both the consumer, you know, the patient, and also a health professional perspective?
Well, I think, I mean, from a patient, the patient perspective has to be that we are going to be better at innovation. We're going to be better at discovering new treatments for diseases which are either not treated at all or very poorly treated. And also, I genuinely believe that we're going to be able to get those new medicines through the R&D process more rapidly. For example, by being able to pick the patient population that we think is most likely to respond, we should be able to do smaller trials. In fact, we've done modelling to show that, you know, we can cut the size of some of the trials that we would want to do by being able to stratify patients more effectively. And the other benefit for patients, of course, is that they'll be going into trials, or even when a medicine is marketed, is that they won't be exposed to drugs that don't work for them.
Hmm.
As you know, 30 to 50% of drugs that are on the market don't work in the patients that they're prescribed for. Now, that means that those 30 to 50% of patients are being exposed to something that is of no benefit to them. If we can cut that level, then that's also got to be good for patients as well. And from a healthcare professional perspective, by being able to pick the right drug for the right patient and actually be able to offer more effective treatments to patients, that's got to be much more rewarding from a healthcare professional perspective.
And just leading on from that, you know, a bit of a broad question, but generally, when you look at AI and redefining the healthcare standards in the future, you know, I feel like we're already working our way towards having recognized the potential that digital innovation can bring to healthcare, which is why it's becoming more and more mainstream. But, you know, how do you see it materializing here? And is it something that, you know, it's not just limited to the industry alone, right? When we talk about collaborating and communicating, it's a conversation that has to happen across all industries, governments, consumers. You know, do you think these conversations are also in full swing, or is there a lot more to progress to?
Oh, I mean, I think there's still a lot more to do. And I've been involved in a number of discussions with funders and regulators and government about the potential for AI and how to expedite its application to healthcare. I recently chaired a panel that was looking at setting up in the UK digital pathology and radiology networks. And it's clear that in some areas we already have quite advanced digitalization of pathology facilities. So the important thing, I think, is to make sure that we bring patients with us and the general public, because this is it's important that people realize the potential, but also that we are very clear about how AI is being used and how it's going to benefit patients, and be very transparent about how it's going to be used. So standards are important from that way. I do think that without AI, that healthcare, as it, you know, to be able to deliver healthcare to the broader population, and actually, frankly, also to the population in the developing world, it's not sustainable without the use of AI technology.
Yeah.
And it's going to be transformational. There's no doubt about it. And I think the most important thing from, where we are, AI is embedded in what we do all the time. And to be really successful, this is actually going to have to happen at the level of the pharmaceutical company, at the level of the healthcare provider, and also at the level of the government funding and regulation. So it is going to be a long journey, but you can, I mean, a clear example of, if you think about standardization, one of the best examples of how standardization kind of revolutionized the transport of goods is actually the agreement of standards on container ships, on containers. That's a universal standard. It's allowed interoperability across the world and completely revolutionized how maritime transport was carried out. And making, you know, kind of healthcare more AI friendly and making healthcare systems more transparent about how they use AI is going to help in its implementation. But it's going to be a long journey. I think it's an important journey. It's going to be an exciting journey. And I'm really pleased that Benevolent's been in at the beginning of it, really.
It's really great to hear about, and I feel even in the realm of drug discovery, it's definitely a narrative that's coming more to the forefront, and it's great to hear about it. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.